a lot of us, including me myself, at the beginning was like, is it possible? You know, we start up a company and William only gave us like 36 months. Set up a company, grew the organization, deliver the vehicles, set up the power swap stations. All those things has to be done in 3 years. We had our doubts, right? So most of us came from well-established and well-structured companies. You have to have a three-year plan, five-year plan, and you do things according to the plan. But in Neil, we didn't do it.
Welcome to Leaders Unplugged, real talk with the impactful. I'm David Bach, and today we're diving into one of the most fascinating business stories of our time, the electric vehicle revolution, and how a Chinese startup called NIO has turned the global automotive industry on its head. My guest today is Mark Zhu, Executive Vice President and Chairman of the Product Committee at NIO. Mark has been part of a leadership team that has taken the company from an idea in Shanghai to one of the world's most innovative mobility brands, building not just cars, but an entire ecosystem around them, from battery swapping to user communities. Here in the West, we often think of China as a place of scale and cost advantage. But NIO is one of the companies that shows that China is very much a place of creativity, speed, and human-centered innovation. Mark and I discuss the NIO story, where he gets inspiration, and what's ahead. Here now is my conversation with Mark Zhu. So Mark, NIO was a startup less than a decade ago when you joined. How did you go from an idea, really, to challenging some of the biggest car makers in the world?
Right. Actually, we are slightly above a decade. The company was founded November of 2014. Having such a company was an idea of William Li. And he always wanted to look into something different and look into something new. And in his eyes, automotive is a very unique industry comparing to real estate or fast-moving products or aviation industry or whatsoever. You know, probably an automobile is one of the largest spendings of any family, apart from, you know, buying real estate. So it's not an industry you can easily enter into. But the time he saw opportunities, one of opportunities is like, the automobile companies are getting too big, and many of them are no longer being operated by the founders, which had a very clear vision what to do. Instead, they are being managed by a lot of professional managers, which often are very much financial driven, profit and loss driven. But sometimes the business is not just profit and loss. It's about who are you satisfying. So that's a very initial idea. How do we create different user value or user experiences for our customers, consumers? And the second is, how can we do things in a much more cost-effective way? So that's how we got started. And along the way, you know, we tap into a few opportunities. The first opportunity is electrification. Anybody can make electrical vehicle, the well-established OEM, surely they can, but they can't not because of technological reasons, rather than economical reasons. You know, with all the investment in the engine transmission plants, you know, it's not an easy decision for any CEOs to say, you know, let's wipe them out, let's start all over again. But for electrification also, though, the battery cells, especially the cells, it's not part of the traditional automotive. It's basic chemical electrical business. So you need a whole set of new skills to do that. So that's where we had an advantage. As a young company, we had no legacy. That's how was the first step we made. And the second thing is, when we looked into the mobile internet, because that's where William made his career and he made his success, being a very well-established entrepreneur in the mobile internet industry, where we saw the opportunity, the computer science is adding a whole new value stream to the car. And now this one becomes even more difficult for the big players. What do you do? You know, like dealing with mechanical engineering, you really have to make sure you don't make mistakes. for every single step, or are you dealing with computer science? You can try many different things. You really want to do is fail quick and also crack those bugs as fast as you can. So that's a two very different way of running the business. That's another thing that we took the advantage of. And then we look into, let's say, political, economical. We created NIO as a global startup, but we're starting from China, where the environment was very much favorable to the EV industry, especially for China, which is the largest consumer vehicle market. The Chinese government is putting a lot of infrastructure support to make sure that alternative energies are getting enough attention. And then also by that time, we recruited many talents in different countries. We set up our office in Munich for styling design experts. We set up an office in London and Oxford for advanced vehicle engineering. And we set up an office in Silicon Valley in California for the digital technologies. We made sure that, you know, we are able to compete in the area, not because we are smarter or we work harder, it's just because the setup is different. So then we launched our first vehicle in June of 2018, which literally was like 3.5 years after we started this company, with William Leading himself, only employee of the company. A lot of us, including myself, at the beginning was like, is it possible? You know, we started up a company and William only gave us like 36 months, or actually at the time was even less than that. Set up a company, grew the organization, delivered the vehicles, set up the power swap stations. All those things has to be done in 3 years. We had our doubts, right? So most of us came from well-established and well-structured companies. You know, you do things where you have to have a plan. You have to have a 3-year plan, 5-year plan, and you do things according to the plan. But in NIO, we didn't do it. We very much focused on problems, solving problems, get everybody stick together and find new, better solutions, innovative. So that sets the foundation of the company. And then after that, we continue to release new products. And meantime, one of the important things that we did was about the community. We set up the new user communities. And that's another thing that not often seen in the automotive industry, but you really look into people. Car is a functional product. Car takes people from point A to point B. Car creates a lot of excitement, driving, you know, listen to good music. But meantime, people, they have different needs. Functional needs are the basic needs, but people also have emotional needs. They want to be recognized. They want to be respected. They want to be hanging out with people they can talk to and share the similar or same visions or lifestyles. You know, that really saved NIO. We had our bad time, difficult time. So, you know, we were very much touched. Our users really stood up and say, you know, let's save this company. We don't want to see this company going away. Let's help them. You know, I still remember like in 2019, where we were in a pretty difficult time, our users spent their own money advertising for NIO, put up ads on the tall buildings, and they introduced their friends, their classmates, and buy a new product. We survived, and we created a brand from out of nowhere. We have now over 900,000 consumers in China, and also some of them in Europe and the Middle East. So we become a car company, a real car company. And the next thing is, we have to continue to look for opportunities. The world has changed a lot over the last 10 years.
And we'll dig into several of those pieces. So, you know, what you said is really think about the consumer and think about the consumer holistically in a way perhaps that some of the legacy car makers didn't do. You talked about the fact that you didn't have legacy, and so you didn't have to worry about a complex supply chain, and that making EVs is easier. I really like the point on, because it's an electric car, because software is so important, you don't have to get everything right, and you can sort of do continuous updates and improvement. You talked about the setting in China, but then thinking globally from the beginning, and then, of course, creating this extremely loyal consumer group. Let's talk a little bit about this, the emotional needs that you spoke about. Your founder and CEO, William Lee, you mentioned him, the person who sort of pitched this crazy idea to you 11 years ago. He studied sociology. And, you know, in this industry, the image of founders of car companies, you know, Ferdinand Porsche, Enzo Ferrari. These are like mechanical engineers, you know, there's like oil, you know, on them, you know, as they built their cars. And you know, how has his background as somebody steeped in the social sciences or humanities shaped the company's culture internally, but also its strategy and its engagement with its customers?
Right. You know, I did not know William's background when I first met him, but I felt something different when the first time I met him. He always talked about the human. He always talked about the people. And, you know, he's absolutely right. From his very simple, straightforward logic, any product that you build for somebody. And if you don't satisfy that need, then you don't have a reason to exist. I think probably this is because he's coming from the mobile internet industry, because in the mobile internet, the customer's choice is so easy. You know, you can just click the keyboard, you can shop from Amazon, and you can switch to eBay right away. You can listen to Spotify, and you can switch over to Apple Music right away. So I think in those industries, the business leaders, they're so much focused on the human needs, because that's the only way they can continue to attract them and continue to grow the business. So he created our company value system. The value system starts from honesty and care and vision and action. It's always the human part going first, honesty and care. And by the way, you know, he didn't just study the sociology. He actually in the university at the same time, he created like 10 or 12 different jobs for himself, and he made all the money. He didn't have to rely on his family. He was one of the richest students in the Beijing University by doing his little small business. That's what I heard. I never seen that, but I do have classmates like that. So I don't know how he did it. He studied sociology. He created the lines of business, and he also did computer science. So as his second major. So I think that helped him also a lot by, you know, really looking through the surface, really looking into what is out there. You know, where he has a vision, say, let's satisfy the human, but he also needs tools, find ways to deliver. It's a bit like our logo. And if you see our logo, it's like the upper part is a sky and it represents a vision. And then the lower part is like two legs of a human. That means, you know, you put your feet on the ground and make sure you don't just think big, but you also act on it.
You mentioned the strong loyalty among your customers, and it's not a coincidence because you all have been thinking very hard about your customers, not just as people who are using cars to drive from A to B, but, you know, their entire set of needs. What's a Neo House, Mark, and how did you guys come up with the idea?
Oh, actually, that was William's idea also. His explanation was very simple. He says, look, if you buy a car, the cheapest car probably costs a few thousand euros, right? So, but if you take an airline, you travel from point A to point B. If you fly business class, you get to sit in a very nice business lounge. And why the people buy the car spend more money than an air ticket cannot be treated as a prestigious guest like the airlines would have treated their business class members. So that's how he says, well, let's do this. You know, we can build a new house. So often this is just a place people can relax and people can meet with their friends. And often the people, young parents, can drop off their kids where they go on for shopping or doing whatever they want to do. It's about creating an environment people want to spend time with you because they enjoy, they found the value for them.
So it's like a club, it's a lounge, right? It's something that people use. To me, when I visited them and I've seen one in Shanghai, I saw the one in Frankfurt as well. It feels a little bit like a co-working space or it's a coffee shop, but then the cars are not too far. It doesn't feel like a traditional showroom. It's a really interesting concept.
Yeah. And we even opened up a new house in the airport.
Okay.
We actually have one car there, but it's like a business lounge and people can go there where we have the Neo Cafe, we have the Neo Cookies, and people just love it.
So the Neo Houses are one way in which what you do is manifestly different. The other one is battery swapping. You talked about this before, and many of our listeners know that one of the main reasons people cite for not switching to an EV is because they're concerned about range. And most of your competitors seem to try to address that by extending the range of batteries, making them bigger, making them, of course, also often more expensive, plus, of course, pressure on governments to build out charging infrastructure. You guys came up with a different model. Can you explain how battery swapping works and what it does for you?
The battery swapping from the consumer standpoint is actually very simple. In front of the swap station, which is like a gas station, then you have an area that with lines, like a block. So all you need to do is drive your car into that block, which is quite simple. Okay, then you just sit back and click the screen. Says now I'm ready to swap the battery. After that, the car will drive itself into the battery swap station. And the station will work with the car, gets everything done, new battery swapped. In 3 minutes, then you drive the car out. So that's how it works. And as of today, we have close to 4,000 swap stations in China and in Europe. So this becomes a very important feature that NIO has as a company. And also, it's very addictive. Once you get used to the battery swap, you don't want to go back. And because it's so much easier than the gas station, you don't even need to step out of car, especially in the hot summer or cold winter. All you need to do is just sit in the car. And this is a great advantage for us to retain the consumers that keeps buying the NIO product. And but we don't do that just for NIO. You know, we also open up the technologies, creating alliances.
So you basically enable business model innovation, right? Battery as a service. And, you know, it's a very novel approach. And so you mentioned before that you have 900,000 vehicles on the road, most of them in China, but you have been expanding internationally. Talk a little bit about that experience. I mentioned to you that I visited the NIO house in Frankfurt to get a bit of a sense. You do see some NIOs on the road in Germany and a couple of other places. What has it been like? You guys have been thinking globally from the beginning. Now you're doing it. What are you learning? What's working? What's not working as well?
We started our globalization from the R&D first. So like when we built all kind of R&D facilities around the world, in Germany, in England, in the United States, in Singapore, but also go to market, we started with Norway, because Norway is one of the best locations for the electrical vehicle industry, and a very large portion of the vehicles in Norway are electrical vehicles. So we made our first success in Norway.
And I think it's 90% of new sales in Norway now are electrical,
correct.
Right? I mean, these are crazy numbers.
The place is very friendly for EV. So we made a very good success. Now, with that kind of success, we saw Norway is same as European Union, which turned out to be totally different. Norway is not European Union. The consumers are different. You know, the governments are different. We took our success. We wanted to copy the same success in different countries. Now, often it's not the best approach. So the lessons we learned, quite a many, you know, one of them is the speed of infrastructure setups. Europe is much, much lower than efficiency-wise, is much different than the China efficiency. So we didn't anticipate the speed and we didn't anticipate the total cost of setting it up. Europe is a very, very important market for NIO, but we need to find better ways of serving our users in Europe. And we start to also look into different vehicles. A lot of our vehicles are big because they are more tailored to the Chinese environment. But some of those vehicles do not fit well in the European environment. Our European colleagues kept telling us, our cars are too big. Maneuvering in the narrow area is really painful. So we learned it, and we now brought in a small car called the Firefly. And it's a car actually was designed for Europe. And also we have one of the best sellers of, even in China, called ET5T, which is a touring or station wagon. That product was also designed and developed for Europe. So I think it's like any other company. It's a learning curve. When you get into a foreign environment, you need to learn the way of doing business. You need to learn the users all over again. You need to learn, you know, how do we adapt to the different environment for NIO, because, you know, we don't want to just go in there and grab the food and walk away. We have to build respect with consumers, with government, with business partners, be part of the society. be able to contribute to the society. So those are sort of the lessons that we learn, and we continue to improve our operations.
I like this way of thinking about it, right? We thought it was going to be this way. It ended up being different. We ended up learning. We're adapting. We're now tailoring around consumer needs. We bring some of that back. But let me push you on that a little bit. I mean, as a technologist, there must have been moments when you thought, man, what are the Europeans doing? I mean, they should just see that these are great products and that battery swapping is superior. I mean, how do you deal with that? Or how does your team deal with that, who must be looking at this and say, what the Europeans are doing is totally inefficient?
The infrastructure setup is totally different. You know, in China, it's more like the government decides to do something, they just go ahead and do it. But in Europe, you know, there are all sorts of different complications which we have to learn. They exist for good reasons, and we just have to respect that, and we just have to adapt to it. The GDPR is so much more strict than the rest of the world. And again, there's a good reason for that, because people respect more individual, respect more privacies. So we just need to adapt to it. You know, it's always give and take in the business environment. It's nothing about right or wrong. It's about satisfying people's needs. So, you know, we had our doubts, say, well, you know, why does it take so long? Then once we figured, you know, it's something that we can't change, then we find a way to work around with it.
You mentioned the Firefly and the ET5 Touring. And if I understand it correctly, they were initially developed for the European markets.
Yes.
But are now a success in China.
Yeah.
So what does that tell you about how globalization fuels innovation?
Yeah, it's, you know, the ET5T was a secret project by our Munich and our Oxford team. Our colleagues in Germany says, let's make a Touring for it. Because in Germany, it's station wagon. You really need the station wagon. So we didn't understand. So, well, if you want space, you have SUV. If you want driving dynamics, you have the ET5. Why the hell you want a station wagon? And station wagons came to China. None of them were ever successful. So we didn't want to invest in it. But our engineers, our designers, somehow they find a way quietly, and they did the claim order. And they stopped applying, they stopped talking about it. They just went ahead and did it. And then like 12 months later, you know, William and I, we were in Munich again for some sort of design review. After everything is done, our head of design, Chris Thomason, pulled us away and said, there's one more thing. I have something special to show you guys. So we did not know what the hell is that special thing. And then we saw it. Well, we loved it. So it's a great car. It's, you know, people often gets blinded with the names. You know, when you talk about the station wagon, immediately we reject it. But when you see the product, actually it doesn't matter. It's a station wagon, it's a Touring, it's a beautiful product. As a matter of fact, you know, ET5T is one of the best sellers in China for our brand and also for all brands. Now a lot of competition are learning from us, and they pushing also the station wagon Tourings. So that's one success. The other success is Firefly. Firefly is made in China. It's designed in Munich and designed for European market. And we did all the user research and figured out, you know, what could be the best fit. So we got everything ready. Production was ready. Design engineering was ready. You know, we even got Euro NCAP 5-star, the best in the world. We got that ready. But because of the conflicts, we had to slow down a little bit to bring the product into the European market. So we sit on a readily available product and was like, what do we do with it now? So we can't just stop the production. And, you know, but meantime, a lot of people saw this product and people love it. And it was not really designed for China, but let's say our leadership said, why don't we give it a try? Try, see how it works in the Chinese market. And we did it. And it turned out to be one of the best selling vehicles. Again, we're selling like 6,000 of them each month. So, you know, I think the key lesson learned is often you forget about the history, the past experiences, forget about the terminologies, you're looking to the people. You know, it really doesn't matter. Good thing a human likes, whether it's a German or British or French or Chinese or Americans, people like good stuff. So as long as you can hit their heart, the product sells.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, listening to you, it sounds easy, right? You empower your folks and you try to forget legacy and you don't think about labels, right? But we know how powerful inertia and path dependence is. And you've worked for Western car makers. You were at General Motors. Talk a little bit about the engineers that you work with, the sort of innovation culture you've been creating, how it differs from what you experienced at Western car makers, and perhaps what can they learn from you if they want to delight their consumers the way you have?
You know, some of the things we can do is because, number one, it's William Lee, he's the owner. You know, he can make decisions, good or bad, but somebody is making decisions. If you talk about innovation, you know, people love to talk about the bright side of the innovation, but people try to avoid the other part, which often is the uncertainty. You don't know what is going to happen because there's no firm answer. It has to be right or it has to be wrong. You know, you can do all sorts of analyses, but in the end, somebody has to make that decision. So I think, first of all, the founder is different. And secondly, I think it's about the self-motivation. You know, often, you know, people do things because they want to, because they love to, because it matters their personal life. It's not about a team. It's not about department. It's not about a company only. It's about themselves. So China in the past few decades has been a fast-growing country. So you literally can see your life is changing so fast. If you work harder, you can see, you know, you're able to change your life. You're able to change your family's life. So that becomes a strong motivation for a lot of young, talented engineers to walk an extra mile, to try different things, and to sometimes sacrifice the lifestyle a little bit because there's the reward is so fascinating.
So what's next for NIO, particularly if you think about product evolution? Is it range? Is it more models? Or is it on the autonomous driving side? Are there new smart features on the horizon? What does the development trajectory for NIO look like at this point?
Okay, we will do all of that. As you just said, you know, it's never ending of, you know, perfecting the product. It's actually because there's nothing perfect. But also on the other side, we are very much looking to efficiency and how do we create more efficiency to make sure that we are long-lasting, sustainable. It's like any pattern. First, some new technology emerges and you bring some new consumers and new user values. Then in the end, you have to look into, you know, all those technology will become commodities. So when everybody has access to those technology, what makes you different? We believe the efficiency is the key. You know, the efficiency is all about taking the waste of the system, you know, to really understand the user better. And not only European users, also Chinese users, also Middle Eastern users, don't offer them something they don't appreciate. Make sure our operating systems is fabulous, is more efficient. There are many things we should do, but I think one of the major focus now, which we're trying to do, and to turn the company profitable again. This is how we can survive and how we can grow. We're still a young company.
Wonderful. Mark, thank you so much for taking the time to have this conversation with us. I hope you learned as much from this conversation with Mark Zhu as I did. If you enjoy Leaders Unplugged, please rate, subscribe, and share on your favorite podcast platform. And tune again for our next episode. Leaders Unplugged is a co-production of IMD and Remote Daily. This episode was produced by Delia Fisher, Caroline Copley, Frank DeBoring, Felix Zeltner, and Rabia Debut. I'm David Bach. See you soon.